about time for things to come around and move these things away before I get the ground. I want sunshine,
sunshine,
sunshine. Now every day I walk along this little road that leads up to the house I know you inside. And you come running to me like a little fox, but I won't eat with you or nothing at all. I want sunshine,
sunshine, sunshine.
Hello, this is Tom Campbell, the host of a series of interviews with local band members and music industry professionals from the 1950s, 60s, and 70s. Today's interview is with Larry Wiegand, Dick Wiegand, and Dave Middlemist from the bands South 40 and Crow. Who came up with the name South 40?
Me.
Was that you?
Yeah.
I couldn't remember that. I could not remember.
Where'd you get that name from, Dave?
Just popped into my head, you know, like it's a back 40 or the South 40, or and those guys liked it, which surprised me, and that's what happened.
Say when you left, I'm gonna go plow the South 40. You
yeah.
Say that.
No. I guess I used to say I had to go plow the South 40.
You had to go plow the South 40?
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
Not knowing what I meant at that time, at this time anyway.
To their credit, they came up with this program of advertising before we were ready to play. And they had these flyers that were going around saying under construction. And they'd use it like, you know, highway signs, you know, ready for inspection. And they'd send these out to all the ballroom owners and schools.
By they, you mean David Anthony Productions.
David Anthony and Bruce. And they kind of got interest in the band before we even played anything. And it was this advertising thing, and they used the South 40 name as, you know, to help them on
so
that.
So when and where was the debut of South 40?
Well,
the very first one?
Good question. I've got it rented down at home. I could get it to you, but I can't recall exactly.
Yeah, so do I.
So now we're into, so I assume we're in 1967 now, before.
Well, yeah. You missed out on the whole Jokers thing with Dave. The Jokers were going for a while before this point. So.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, Dave, let's hear a little bit about your, Dave, let's hear a little bit about your experience with Jokers Wild.
Well, I just happen to live across the street from an old friend of yours. You remember that guy named John Klein? Well, nice to see you over there, and I don't remember if you had a guitar or an amp with you, so I knew you were in a band, and I had a guitar and amp in the house. So one time on purpose, I played as loud as I could, the best licks I could, and you came up and knocked on my door and said, invited me over to a tryout. And
so who was playing in the Jokers Wild at that time, Dave?
I don't.
This will all have to be edited, but this was the first band that you were talking about, Cliff Hynes, Doug Jurdy, John Klein, and me. And then we were putting together something, and it wasn't working out. And then I went over and asked you to come over and jam with us. And then you were in a cab. You were in the Cavaliers at that time.
Yeah, and we only played one gig.
So then, so I had you come down with us, and then all of a sudden that didn't pan out. And then I think there was about a month or two there where Dave Wagner called me up and said he was quitting the Aardvarks and starting a new band, and he wanted me to play bass. And
what year was that?
That was 65, November 65.
Well, Dave, who was in the Cavaliers?
The only guy's name I remember is John Kokesh.
I remember him.
He's a bass player.
And you're playing?
And we played one gig at Brooklyn Center High School. I was the lead singer in the band. And thank God there is not a recording of that gig. Because I'm sure we stunk. But.
Okay, so Danny hears you, invites you over to hang out with Jokers Wild, and what happens after that?
It just, we started playing.
And who?
It was Dave and Gene Balaban, and was it Pete right away?
Right off the bat, it was Dave, me, and Gene Balaban. Then Pete Huber came in.
Yeah.
Then we needed another person. Then you from the Cavaliers.
And actually, I was playing rhythm guitar.
Yes.
And Dave Wagner had a Doric organ.
Doric? Doric. Oregon? Really?
Doric. Doric, Oregon.
And after, I don't know how long we were together, he decided he wanted to be a lead man. And I had a piano at home, so I kind of knew. I never took lessons, but I kind of knew how to play chords and stuff. And he said, "Will you play the organ?" And that's how that happened. And he became a lead singer. And I finally decided at some point for South 40, in the beginning of South 40, I had an M3 Hammond, the small model.
With a Horner piano. Did you have a Horner?
Yeah. A little piece of junk. Yeah. But then I was lucky enough to get latch onto a B3 and a Leslie and start using that. And at some point we did the Crow thing. I don't recall when that was.
Okay, so South 40 is being kind of put together here as put together here by David Anthony Productions. And what's the new lineup now, and who's playing what?
Well, South 40 was me and Dick, Dave Wagner, and Kink, and our old drummer from the Ravons, Harry Niels. That was the five of us. And then Lonnie, who was with me and Dick and the Ravons, went with Denny and Pete. Was this right? And then you had the keyboard guy you had. You had a five-piece.
The keyboard player was Greg Springer, which was out of the Illusions. Which was
Greg Springer, yeah.
The Cavaliers turned into the Illusions. This all trips all over itself.
And you had another guy, though. Wasn't it a five-piece?
Bill Jordan from the Country Band.
Okay, so those two guys were with... It was a five-piece when this happened. 67 is when we started South 40.
Yeah, Kokesh was the bass player in the Illusions. Oh. Also. And I stole the keyboard player.
And my wife still talks to him once in a while.
John?
Yeah.
Okay, so how does South 40 differ from the Ravons?
Well, we had a lead singer for once. You know, we had a guy that could, we didn't have to worry about so much trying to sing, you know. And our approach was, in the Ravons, basically what happened was Lonnie was kind of into his folk acoustic thing, and he does it really well. And me and Dick were kind of wanted to play more of the harder edge Yardbirds, Jeff Beck, and at the time when like Cream and Hendrix were just coming out at the time, I believe, we kind of wanted to do that. And Lonnie was kind of leaning more towards the acoustic Bob Dylan-ish Donovan style, and so we kind of morphed into doing that kind of material, and along with like Mitch Ryder and the Rascals. That's where our kind of blue-eyed soul stuff.
Yeah, we kind of ended up doing some R&B.
We did R&B with Otis Redding and Wilson Pickett. We kind of made an attempt to do that, kind of put a rock edge on R&B, basically. And the Jokers, when Lonnie did go with them, what my recollection is, they ended up as a power trio doing this Cream Hendrix style.
Blue Cheer.
I mean, they had this big sound for three guys. Mm-hmm. And I guess I was expecting Lonnie to do more of the acoustic stuff, and he kind of got into that. But that's what was popular, so.
Were R&B bands sort of the standard norm for local bands? Let me rephrase that. Were R&B / dance bands the norm for the typical local Twin Cities bands?
Well, they're real popular. The Mystics were real big at this point, and they influenced a lot of the material that people were playing, along with the Underbeats and the Del Counts. Those were the big groups at the time. And they did what was on the radio, which is basically, you know, Young Rascals, Mitch Ryder, you know, this kind of thing. And, of course, the Mystics were more like The Temptations and James Brown, so they did more of that style, Motown.
What were some of the 1960s local bands that impressed you guys?
I used to like the Mystics, the Underbeats, the Accents, Gregory D and the Ivanis, and, Lord, can't remember. There were so many of them back then. Larry? Those are the ones that I remember.
Well, I go along with that along, but I think one of the first bands that I heard that really knocked my socks off was the Dorados.
What era was that now?
That was early. That was in the early to mid 60s. And that was Donnie Dax and Gary Nielsen on piano and Tom Sechrest. These guys were playing R&B like the Accents were doing it. I mean, they were doing it with sort of a rock edge to it too. I mean, so they were playing all this blues stuff, but they were playing it like rock guys would play it, and they kind of knocked me out, and they impressed me, and I remember that. But I mean, a lot of those bands in them days impressed me for one reason or another. I like the Underbeats, love them. The Ivanis, love them. I mean, I was just like any other kid at the time. The Big Three was the Big Three. We all went through that. And
Accents, Underbeats, Ivanis.
Yeah. And then, of course, there's that second wave, which we kind of considered us, you know, us with TC Atlantic and the Chancellors and all those kind of bands were kind of in that second wave of groups that were maybe part of it, you know. But
Dave, how about you? Any bands you really liked from the 1960s?
Yeah, everything Dick and Larry had mentioned, Accents.
Mm-hmm. Accents.
I used to go to Ryan's Ballroom every weekend, and places just jammed, the floors going like this, up and down.
You couldn't go on break, you couldn't go to the bar.
Couldn't
get to the bar from the bandstand.
You couldn't move. And it was what made me want to be a musician and, you know, be like those guys.
Tell me a little bit about Reggie's Dance Land. Did you ever meet Reggie Callahan?
I never met him.
Well, I can't say I met him. I was in a conversation with some people when he was there, but I never met him.
So, what was Dance Land like?
Huge, big. The floor used to go up and down.
That was a carryover ballroom from the 1940s big band era.
Oh, even before that. We played there with groups like Little Caesar and the Conspirators, those kind of bands, and the Corvettes. I mean, I remember, I believe it was the Trashmen, the Underbeats and the Chancellors played there, and that was one of those nights where you could see the place was going like this, just up and down. And it didn't crash. I heard it crash later, but that night it looked like they were going to go through the floor.
So all this promotion about South 40 before the band comes out, does that put some pressure on you guys?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We rehearsed a lot. We were trying to get that ready. And yeah, we were all in school at the time, too.
I remember we were rehearsing for a couple of months before that band came out. And we were trying to take the band in a whole different direction. We did a lot of R&B material, and I don't recall if we did any originals then.
There was so much material
to choose from. We wanted to get away from the surfer music and the kind of the rock and rollish stuff and get a little harder edge on the material. So Dave had some ideas, Sam and Dave material, and Otis Redding.
Eddie Floyd.
Eddie Floyd.
Yeah,
Knock on wood.
We figured if we took a white band and tried to make them play R&B music, it would give it a different sound, and that's what we were aiming for.
And how was the band received?
Very well.
I think we did.
We worked quite a bit with that group, I remember. We even recorded a record at one of the clubs we worked at, Someplace Else.
Where was Someplace Else?
Robbinsdale.
Robbinsdale.
It was a former bowling alley. Made it into a nightclub.
Really? I didn't know it was a bowling alley. Yeah.
It's, the building's still there.
Is it really?
Yeah, I have no idea what it is now. And the owner had a, what kind of those dogs are those? 500-pound dogs, remember that? John was the owner.
Yeah. He owned Casino Royale, too, a little bit later.
Yeah.
How did this album come about, Live at Someplace Else?
Bruce?
We had been recording. Actually, this wasn't the first thing we had done. We had done a single called The Penny Song down at K-Bank, as a matter of fact. I think it was called Mike's Side or Cookhouse at that time. I'm not sure it was still K-Bank. This is Dave Anthony started a label called Metro Beat. I believe it was Dave that started this. Him and Mike Jan. Is that a single? A single. And it got some airplay, like in Duluth and Fargo and Mankato and things like that. So they decided to do an album, a live album. So that's kind of how that came out.
All right, so the South 40 are now up and running, and what is your first record?
I think it's the Penny Song that we recorded at Universal Audio, which is K-Bank.
Who wrote the Penny Song?
A guy named Bill Normandin and me. I wrote the music, and he had the lyrics.
Okay, and the flip side was?
Good Lovin'.
And that was the Rascal Song?
Well, yeah, we kind of put a Mitch Ryder spin on it, but it was the Rascal Song, yeah.
Okay, so did this record have any success?
I don't believe it got a little airplay in places like Fargo and Duluth and Sioux Falls and things like that, but it didn't really do much that I remember.
How did you wind up down in Iowa?
Bruce Brancig, our illustrious agent, worked out a deal with a studio down there so we could go get probably cheaper time.
Well, cheap time, and we used to play at Roof Garden.
We play at Roof Garden.
They're tied in with Roof Garden, so.
That would have been Iowa Great Lakes Recording
Corporation.
Yeah, so we were trying to kill two birds with one stone.
What song? Real nice. They were nice to us.
Mm-hmm.
What song did you record in Iowa?
Well, the one that I remember is Keep On Running.
Was that an original?
No, that's a Spencer Davis tune. And then we did a song called I Want You to Love Me. But it's not the Ravens, I Want You to Love Me. It was another original song called I Want You to Love Me. And it was sort of a blues tune, sort of a blues shuffle tune.
And what happened to those songs you recorded in Iowa?
They ended up on the Roof Garden Jamboree albums.
A series of albums.
They weren't released as singles that I know of.
Okay. All right. So then how does the... okay. So then you have the live album, South 40 Live at Someplace Else. Mm-hmm. And...
68?
March of 68.
Mm-hmm. March of 68. Who recorded the band, the engineering?
Well, Tom Jung was in the...
Yeah.
There was a mobile recording, and Jung and Tony Andreessen were in the truck that night. I didn't know Tony was in there, but he told me he was.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And we did it live at someplace else on A-Track Scully. And
this comes out on the Metro Beat label also.
That's right.
As did your first 45, The Penny Song, correct?
Right.
And Metro Beat was...
I know David Anthony had something to do with that label. I'm not sure if there's more people involved.
Okay, and then there's another 45 comes out, and which 45 is that?
This is called I Want Sunshine and Going Someplace Else, which was...
written for that recording session.
Yeah, we wrote that for the live album, the Going Someplace Else.
Oh, okay. So did both the 45s come out before the live album then?
I think the album came out, and then they pulled the single I Want Sunshine off of it, if I remember right.
And that sounds familiar.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, so the band's playing around town again. Casino Royale, where was that?
North of 694 and 65, about 2 miles.
Like Twin Lakes.
In a strip mile. Strip Mall.
It's still there. The building is still there. Yeah.
Okay. Where else was the band playing?
All over. We used to play, that band played the prison. That band played everywhere you can think. A lot of schools, colleges.
Was David Anthony booking primarily out of the Twin Cities or both?
Yes.
How did that work with the different booking agents?
Well, there was some agents in town that like Dick Shapiro and
Marshall
kind of had the whole booking agency thing for the local clubs and venues locked up, and they had their own favorite groups that they would work in there, and David Anthony had us and a number of other groups working out of town in out of town ballrooms. He was real big in ballrooms and So we did a lot of traveling in those days.
Schools.
Schools, yeah.
Armories.